Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we are going to be talking about the semiconductor supplier issue that has been affecting the automotive industry as a whole. Then we do have a few other topics to go through as well. This is a live episode because after we go through this, I do have some thoughts to share that I thought would be best shared live. So we're going to do the kind of normal episode structure, but it will be live, so bear with me as always. And I always hope the audio is working well, so let me know. But we'll get into it. We'll start off just looking at the stock today. So finished down 5.3% to $804.82. That compared to the NASDAQ, which is hidden here on the video, but down a quarter of a percent. So it was a tough day for Tesla today, especially relative to the broader market. Other automakers did, you know, at least the ones I looked at, fare worse than the market today as well. I think GM and Ford were right around down 2%. NIO probably in that ballpark as well. So I don't know that this drop was entirely isolated to Tesla, but certainly Tesla moved a little bit further. Perhaps related to the supply of semiconductors. So let's move into that topic. For whatever reason, I've had, 50 to 100 people ask me about this over the last 2 days, whether that's in the YouTube comments or on Twitter or on Patreon. A lot of people, for some reason, seem to be incredibly interested in this in the last 48 hours, even though this has been something that's been discussed in the automotive industry since back in mid-December, and Tesla has already talked about it a little bit too, so we'll go through Tesla's comments here as well. So essentially what's going on, I'll go into some links here in a second, but what's going on here is that there is the semiconductor supply shortage, which is a factor of multiple different things that have factored into it. So primarily what has been driving it is two things, the pandemic and then the rise in some areas of consumer electronics. So the work from home movement during the pandemic has caused increased supply for things like laptops and stuff like that that people are upgrading for working from home. The 5G cycle with phones has caused an increase from what I gather in semiconductor needs. And then the next generation consoles with the Xbox One, whatever it's called now, and the PS5 launching. Those things have worked together to create more demand in the consumer electronics space. And then in the automotive space, because of the shutdowns that were experienced in the first half of 2020, a lot of the automakers cut their orders or their contracts with semiconductor suppliers to help get through that period of time. So what that has caused is because those suppliers didn't necessarily want to cut production and things like that, they worked through their safety stocks. So let's get into some comments here from chip makers. So let's see. The first one that I want to look at here, this is from Microchip Technology. So this is from a couple weeks back, or I guess not only 1 week back, but they kind of talk about how they got into the situation that they're in terms of the semiconductor in the automotive supply chain. So they're talking about how their customers generally pulled back very hard during the pandemic. There was no backlog visibility. In this environment, they had no choice to draw down inventories and safety stock to protect themselves from what looked like severe economic contraction. And they saw similar actions from their suppliers that they worked together for actually producing their semiconductors. So they said during this time, no one in the industry was adding any capacity, obviously given the uncertainty about when things would recover. And that uncertainty extended significantly into the automotive market as well. So one of the things that they talk about here that we'll come back to a little bit later is that they're offering this microchip preferred supply program, they call it PSP, to offer the prioritized capacity to companies that are willing to work with them to order 12 months of continuous, non-cancelable, non-reschedulable supply. So they're not guaranteeing capacity for that, but they're prioritizing people that are willing to make those longer term commitments. And because if we rewind a little bit back to the first half of 2019, because a lot of automakers were uncertain about their demand, they were unwilling to, you know, give a lot of certainty to these suppliers. So that's kind of brought the semiconductor situation into where it is today, and they're trying to work through this now, and that's impacting a lot of different automakers. A couple other quotes here just from people in the industry. So this one is from Continental, a major supplier in the automotive space. They're talking about lead times for semiconductors, saying, quote, "With lead times of 6 to 9 months, the semiconductor industry has not been able to scale up fast enough to meet this unexpected growth in automotive demand," which really is a return to previous levels, not necessarily new growth. Then they continue saying, quote, the bottlenecks from the semiconductor industry are expected to continue well into 2021, causing major disruptions in Continental's production. So that gives us a bit of a timeline in terms of how this issue looks. We don't necessarily have a scale from that. And then let's move into one other quote here. This is from TSMC, one of the obviously major manufacturers. I think they do like 70% of semiconductors or something like that. So specific to their automotive customers, they continued to decrease demand for TSMC's semiconductors in third quarter of 2019. Oop, what happened there? Little page refresh. The chipmaker only began to see sudden recovery in automotive orders in the fourth quarter, their CEO said on their earnings call earlier this month. So that kind of highlights just the issues that were caused into the channel, that were brought into the channel from the decrease in orders from automotive companies in the first half of the year. So anyway, getting forward to this year then, I've been doing like hours of research on this all day to see where everyone is at. So I've got like the 10 major automakers here and all the comments that they have made on the semiconductor issue and how it's impacting them. So we'll just start off, we'll just kind of go through these. Volkswagen, they're saying that it's affected their MQB platform, both in Volkswagen passenger cars, Volkswagen commercial vehicles. Then they've had impacts on Skoda, Seat, and I don't know if that's pronounced that way or if it's SEAT, but, and to a limited extent, they said Audi is affected. So somewhat limited in terms of what it's affecting. Obviously, there's no mention of Porsche there or anything like that. And that's certainly not all of their production. Toyota, they say they've reduced production on the Tundra, so it seems relatively isolated there. Renault Nissan, they said that Nissan expects 150,000 fewer vehicles this year for full year. And then for Stellantis, I think I might have put some of the Renault stuff in Stellantis, but regardless, they say that Stellantis is the new company between PSA and Fiat Chrysler, the merger there. They said that they've delayed restarting production on the Jeep Compass, paused production of the Chrysler 300, Dodge Charger, and Challenger, and then a brief pause of Opel and Citroen and Peugeot. They're TBD on any delays there as of the last thing that I saw. Hyundai Kia, they said that South Korea's Hyundai and Kia have avoided material chip shortages as they have maintained larger orders. So that kind of goes back to what we heard there from TSMC and from Microchip Technology talking about how the orders that they were getting cut impacted their ability to supply these automakers, and they had to work through that backlog of safety stock. But if these automakers stayed firm in their commitments, then they would have just kept things rolling and kept things on their original plan. So automakers that did that should be less impacted, which obviously we'll come back to when we talk about Tesla, which will be on the next kind of slide here. As for GM, they cut production at 4 plants. Aside from that, it was a little bit unclear in terms of how much production was cut or what models, but it seems pretty broad there for GM. Honda, they cut production on the Civic and the Accord. They expect 100,000 fewer vehicles for the full year. So like I said there with Nissan, obviously a lot of that impact is going to come in the first half of the year, but they're just saying, hey, for the total year, you know, out of the 4 to 8 million vehicles or whatever that we produce, about 100 to 150,000 of that is going to be reduced from the semiconductor shortage. As for Ford, they said that they reduced production on the F-150. That happened in the last couple of weeks. They've also paused production on the Ford Escape, the Lincoln Corsair, and they said that they expect 10 to 20% reduction in global production for Q1. As for Daimler, they said they cut production in their Bremen and Rastatt plants, however that's pronounced, but they said that it's primarily a first quarter problem. So that's their, in those two plants, generally their C-class in Bremen, and then in Rastatt, the A and the B-class. For BMW, they maintained production, but they are watching the situation intensively, and then Volvo avoided shortages so far. So when we look across all of these different automakers, we can see there's variability here, right? Like not every automaker is being impacted to the same degree. You've got Ford, you know, saying 10 to 20% reduction globally. They seem to be among the worst situation here, but of course not every automaker is commenting in that way. It seems like Volkswagen has also been hit relatively hard with this. But some like BMW and Volvo are just saying, you know, really not changing anything, but monitoring the situation closely. So, as I said, Tesla has made a couple of comments on this. If we flip over here, both in their 10K that was filed on Monday, and then, of course, on the earnings call back in late January, Zach talked about this briefly in the opening comments that he made, Zach, the CFO. So, in the 10K, they said, you know, basically just addressing that there might be port congestion, supplier shutdowns, delays because of the ongoing impacts related to the pandemic, and that they talk about the increase in demand for personal electronics has, quote, created a shortfall for microchip supply, and it is yet unknown how we may be impacted. Later in another section, they say that, quote, for example, a global shortage of microchips has been reported since early 2021, and the impact to us is yet unknown. They continue to talk about the unavailability of suppliers or components for suppliers could result in production delays, et cetera, stuff that we all, you know, kind of understand. So essentially what Tesla is saying is like, hey, we don't know. We're doing the best that we can to manage through the situation. We don't know the exact impact of it yet. Zach on the earnings call said that, quote, the global semiconductor shortage as well as port capacity may have a temporary impact in Q1. So again, Tesla, they're not giving us as much information as some other automakers are. And hopefully that is because they haven't had to deal with any production shutdowns because of this. If we go back to kind of the comments earlier about the orders and how the shortage is somewhat of a result of canceled or reduced orders from automakers in Q1 and Q2 of last year, Tesla wasn't in that situation as badly as these other automakers were. If we go back to, I think Q1, maybe it was Q2, Tesla was down like 5% year over year, whereas the rest of the automotive industry was on average down 30% in terms of production and deliveries. So there wasn't as big of a drop for Tesla. And because Tesla was probably among the more confident automakers, knowing that they had a lot of demand, seeing that they had a lot of demand in that period of time, they were probably able to give more secure orders and contracts to their suppliers, whether that's semiconductors or elsewhere. So I think Tesla just naturally, as a result of those circumstances, is going to be less impacted by this. Tesla also has a less diverse offering of vehicles, so it should be a little bit easier to manage the supply chain with just, you know, four models versus who knows how many models from these other automakers. So there should be, and Tesla's just a smaller scale company right now, you know, delivering 150,000 to 200,000 vehicles per quarter. So I don't expect a major impact here from Tesla. And if we look at this next line here, this is just a note that I saw from IHS Market. They do market research. They say that, quote, more than 670,000 fewer cars will be produced in the first quarter of the year as a result of the shortages, according to research by data provider IHS Market. So if we assume the automotive market is around 80 million per year, a reduction of 670,000 fewer cars on 20 million per quarter is only about 3%. So I'm not sure why this has been receiving so much attention over the last few days. Again, because it's something that we have known about and the estimated impact is relatively small. Worst case, it seems like automakers are being hit maybe 10 to 20% of production. Some are being hit none, not at all. And maybe the average there is somewhere between, you know, 5% and 3% or something like that. So I don't expect this to be a big impact for Tesla. And this kind of relates to the tweet that I had earlier today. If any of you happen to see that, I said, yawns aggressively. This tweet is directed at short-term thinking. This is a result of me going through all this stuff today, doing like hours of research on this, and then just sitting there and thinking about how little any of this matters. This is such a short-term issue. If we think about the semiconductor industry, these people are manufacturing millions and millions and millions of units every single quarter. This is a very robust supply, a very robust area of supply that's experiencing a temporary shortage for, you know, a myriad of reasonable reasons. So there shouldn't be any doubt that this problem is going to be resolved. Maybe for a couple months here, it has some impact on automakers. Maybe that impact extends to Tesla. But even if Tesla's manufacturing, you know, operations, their production were reduced by like 15% quarter over quarter. So looking at that Ford number, that's probably where Ford's going to come in. Even if Tesla's production was down 15% quarter over quarter, that would still give them their second best quarter ever of production. And if we compare it to last year, Q1, they'd be up like 50% from that, you know, 140,000 vehicles versus 102,000 last year. So not quite, you know, 50%, but there still would be significant growth, even if there was a large impact from this, which it doesn't seem to be the case as of yet. Even if there were that impact, the industry would resolve that very quickly. Again, we saw there from TSMC or maybe from Continental, they were saying, you know, 3 to 6 months in terms of how long it could take to fix this issue. So this tweet's not entirely directed on that. It's a culmination of that, and then just a lot of, I don't know, short-term discussion that I've been seeing over the last few days that seems to just be sort of creeping in. And it's just, I don't know, it gets a little bit frustrating at times. And it's kind of weird because this is like Tesla Daily, and you know, we kind of talk about all of those little short-term things often. But the way that I kind of view this is sort of like hand-holding through things like that, because at the end of the day, we should be thinking in decade-long terms, and the day-to-day stuff doesn't necessarily impact that all that much. And part of Tesla Daily is just kind of to be a reminder that, hey, on a decade-long time horizon, this stuff isn't necessarily all that important. You know, if Tesla makes 50,000 fewer vehicles because of this, it's not a big deal. They're still going to be able to, you know, continue their expansion on their gigafactories. They're still going to be able to continue their R&D. They're still going to be able to develop their full self-driving, continue expanding the beta, making that more robust and more accurate. They're going to continue to be able to work on, you know, construction at Giga Berlin, Giga Texas. They're going to continue to be able to work towards Model 2, building out the Cybertruck. None of those things are going to be impacted by a semiconductor shortage show. It's just a really small issue in the grand scheme of things that, you know, I don't know if the stock was down because of that today, but if you're thinking about Tesla as a long-term investment, something like this is really, at the end of the day, just noise. So that's kind of my thoughts. I'm just looking at my notes over here to make sure I didn't miss anything there. kind of a rant there, but I think that captured most of it. So just a couple of other topics for today. If we flip over here, this is a report from Cash in Germany, and it is on Tesla's Giga Berlin battery manufacturing plans. So obviously that's going to be sort of a separate facility at Giga Berlin. And this is from Jörg Steinbach, who we often get information from, the Minister of Economic Affairs from Brandenburg. He's saying that, and this is a translated quote, or I guess this isn't a direct quote, so I won't say it that way, but Cash says that at Tesla, battery cell production could begin in about 2 years, with which Musk wants to supplement the electric car plant in Grünheide. So I think that date is a little bit surprising. I'm sure many of us would expect battery cell production to be earlier than that. But we also haven't seen a whole lot of timelines on that. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch this particularly and see, you know, what we might find out. I think as Tesla progresses down this, we'll see more from when they have to sort of get approval for things. I think we'll see some of those documents come out. So we'll definitely be keeping a close eye on that, because if Tesla wants to ramp up Giga Berlin, and they've said that that'll use internal battery production, they've only got, you know, best case from Fremont, 10 gigawatt hours per year once that gets fully ramped up to support that. And that's just not going to, you know, that's not going to cover the production at Giga Berlin for very long. So certainly not for 2 years. And I think if we think in the context of Tesla's goal of 100 gigawatt hours of battery production internally in 2022, it doesn't really fit with this timeline either. About two years from now would be 2023. So I don't know if that's just, you know, a conservative date from what we've heard from Jörg Steinbach so far. He hasn't really, you know, followed that sort of a tactic most of the time. But it was interesting to see this, so I just wanted to pass that along. The next thing here, also sticking with Germany, kind of some good news. A lot of, or at least in parts of Europe, Autopilot's functionality is a little bit restricted due to some of the regulation there. Looks like there might be some progress here a little bit in Germany. So Teslarati here reporting that the German government is working towards passing something. I don't think it's fully passed. It's working through legislation right now that would allow level four driving in vehicles. So level four, as a reminder, is essentially fully autonomous, but it just requires, it doesn't function in, you know, every single circumstance that a human could drive. So you can't necessarily like take out the steering wheel, take out the pedals from a level four vehicle. But otherwise, it is fully autonomous, is capable of operating fully autonomously. It just needs to give you some warning or give you some warning if you need to take over, or it just can't operate in some certain circumstances. So Germany, it looks like they're, you know, really focused on making sure that that is removed as a regulatory hurdle, at least up to that level four level, redundant level there. But as part of this update, one of the people working on it said that, quote, Germany will be the first country in the world to bring autonomous vehicles out of the research labs and onto the road. Today, we have taken a decisive step toward this goal. I'm delighted that the cabinet has cleared the way for our law on autonomous driving. Now the draft will go to the Bundestag and Bundesrat for further consultation. We need swift implementation for the innovations in the transformation process. I am sure that we will reach groundbreaking agreements here too, so that Germany continues to be the international number one in autonomous driving. So definitely good to see that. Elon Musk continues to talk about how the regulatory environment, he sees that as being not necessarily a bottleneck, but slowing down the rate of adoption until Tesla can really prove that technology out. So it's good to see that, you know, as we saw with NHTSA a few weeks back with some of the legislation changes here in the United States, now we're seeing some of this in Germany. It seems like governments are at least aware of this and trying to get ahead of it to some extent. All right, so the next topic here, just a quick update. Tesla filed an SEC filing today sharing that Vanguard has exceeded the 5% ownership stake. So just like we saw with BlackRock a couple of weeks ago, across Vanguard, they now own 57.8 million shares of Tesla. So I think that's, 6 million more or something than BlackRock for a 6.1% stake in total. This shouldn't be too surprising. Just like when we saw Tesla added to the S&P 500, when we saw BlackRock's stake increase because they added it into their, S&P 500 funds. Similar thing that we're seeing here with Vanguard. I don't know exactly what their stake was before, but I think it was around 38 million or something like that. So shouldn't be too surprising to see it jump up above this 5% threshold, and likely all due to the S&P 500 inclusion. Just looking at my notes here, a couple other quick things, and then we'll wrap it up for today. The U.S. federal tax credit on electric vehicles, it looks like there's been a little bit of progress in there. I don't have an article on it here to share, but and we'll probably talk a little bit more about this tomorrow, but it looks like they may be extending that from being sort of the first 200,000 vehicles to get that U.S. federal tax credit to now being about 600,000 vehicles. And then, of course, there's always that little short phase-out period. So overall, I would actually expect this to not be a huge impact to Tesla, or maybe even be slightly negative, because it gives other automakers much more time with that credit, just like we saw with the 200,000 vehicles, because Tesla's going to burn through that like instantly. So it would just be around for a few quarters of Tesla if it's introduced in this way. Sorry, there's a dog barking out there. Classic live stream. Anyway, so that's kind of the update on the federal tax credit. We'll keep an eye on how that legislation potentially advances. There was a report by Bloomberg today. Again, I don't have it pulled up here, but that Rivian may be looking to IPO sometime around September. So some people were speculating that may be attributed to the drop in Tesla today. I don't think that would really be the case. 5% drop in Tesla is many, many billions of dollars. I don't think that would be capital shifting out of Tesla to prepare for a Rivian IPO, 7 months from now. I think that's unlikely. Or even just getting out of the stock because there's going to be, more competitors in the market. I don't know. I don't really think that line of thought checks out to me. And then the last thing for today, just a quick comment here on the comment sections in YouTube. So there are these spam accounts, impersonator accounts that, make their profile picture Tesla Daily. They say they're Tesla Daily, and then they comment and say you to connect with them on like WhatsApp, and they have like hints on trading strategies for crypto. I'm never going to say any of that stuff to you guys. I'm never, ever going to do that. If you see something like that, report the comment. You should be able to see either a little check mark by my name or some sort of like black highlight or outline that indicates that it's me. And if it ever seems weird, you can click on the account and go in there and just, see if it's actually this channel or if it's an impersonator channel. But I'm sorry about that. As soon as I see those, I do delete them. It's super frustrating. It takes forever. But yeah, just let me know if you see them and I'll take care of it. And I'll never ask you to contact me on WhatsApp, so don't ever do that. But that will wrap it up for today. So as always, thank you for listening. Hopefully that wasn't too ranty and we got through it okay. But other than that, I will talk to you guys tomorrow for the February 11th episode of Tesla Daily. In the meantime, you can make sure to follow me on Twitter @TeslaPodcast, and I'll see you then. Thank you.